But it's so good to be here. I am so honored to be here. And I'll talk about that in a moment, but I'm just so honored to be here. The Lord hasn't blessed me with a lot of opportunities to speak to you. I do it for a living elsewhere, to the marketplace, but I haven't had a chance to speak to you much. This is very good. I do get lots of opportunity to work with the kids, and I've been very honored to do that. Kind of had to quit a little bit of that recently in order to do other things, but I'm very happy to be here. Let's show that first slide. There it is. Oh, and the video on it. Thanks, Sarah. Sarah and I are going to be working as a team here today, and she didn't have a chance to check the volume on it. If you click on the picture, you did that already, I know. So, just while Sarah's doing that, the talk today is called Acrobat, and it's taken from this song, because the song kept ringing in my head as I was preparing this talk, and it seemed to describe what we need to talk about here today. It's an old song, recorded some 26 years ago. The band that plays this has just begun to play it publicly for the first time. They never played it publicly until this year. And maybe there's something special about this year. That's one of the ideas I'll be toying with. Well, I certainly don't know the answer to the question, is there something special about this year? But maybe there is something special about this year. I think there is. It's not working? We can go on. Okay. Very briefly, it's a song from U2's Zooropa. Very old song. I'm a very old person. And the song is Acrobat. And I wanted to talk about the acrobats in our lives because sometimes we bump into people who, as the lyrics say, they talk like this and they act like that. I must be an acrobat because I talk like this and I act like that. Sometimes we have people in our lives that are that person. Sometimes we are that person. I've stood here before. Oh, is it gone? But there's no volume. Do you have volume? Let's do it then. Now talk it up. We've been doing a series here at WCV Church where we've been asked to give our reflections on something that happened this summer. The thing that happened this summer was Nathan Rieger, who was a former, who was at the time until he resigned, a pastor at our church. He resigned, connected with the fact that he was arrested in California for a crime. And so we've been giving our reactions to that. And I know, as I've heard from you and heard from those of you, I've heard from others who've heard from you, that you've kind of had various reactions even to the series, that some of you have really felt like, you know, like, this is maybe even funny for us to talk about. After all, we're really waiting to the end of the month to find out what's going to happen with that situation, what's going to happen with the court case, and even if something... even if something negative is going to come out of the particular charges, at least. And I want to say, and some of you sort of like hoping that things would go back to normal, and some of you, I want to say that I'm really hopeful that Nathan will return and be with us. That is absolutely my hope and my desire. And I want to explain a little bit about why I have that hope today. I also want to say, too, that even the fact that it's gone this far is for many of us an incredible betrayal, and we're confused by it. Of course, we're confused about where it's going and what's going to happen, but we're confused that even this happened. And I want to talk a little bit about this, that sometimes whether it's the case here with Nathan or in other times in our lives, we do run into people who talk like this and act like that. We have to figure out what to do with that. I want to share too that I have incredible hope for this church, my family, and you've been my family for almost 25 years now. I have incredible hope, and that's very much bound into what's happened. I don't really know how all these things work, but let me just show you. Sarah, if you can show us the next slide, and I'll go through these points quite quickly. Here's an interesting timeline. On July 23rd, at the National Vineyard Conference, some of you were there. David Roos gave a sermon on Hebrews 12. Once more, I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens, so that what cannot be shaken will remain. On August 6th, Bill Hybels, we had heard about him from Willow Creek Community Church, but August 6th was the day that Steve Carter found himself throwing up backstage, realizing he could no longer pastor one of the most recognized churches on the planet because of the sexual misconduct that we'd heard coming out from the Washington Post, particularly on August 6th and before that. On August the 13th, Jeff Jakes of Orangewood Church and Christian School in Maitland, Orlando, resigned due to sexual misconduct. On August the 14th, the Roman Catholic Church in Philadelphia releases a report that 1,000 children have been abused by 300 people, 300 priests, in the last 70 years. On August the 19th, we heard that our former pastor had been arrested. On August the 12th, the German Roman Catholic Church released a report involving a molestation of 3,677 minors since 1946. On September the 21st, Dean Curry of Tacoma's Life Center resigned due to sexual misconduct. On August 11th, just over this month, Peter Tran did the same. On August the 16th, I'm going to stick everything in August. On October the 16th, Bill Coates from First Baptist Church in Gainesville, Florida did the same. And this week, on August the 31st, Bishop John Jenkin from New York did the same. Now, I'm not trying to pretend here for a moment that this never happened before. Not at all. This is a sadly old story, and that's proved by the reports released by the Roman Catholic Church. I would suggest that it seems like it's happened to us, or it could have, or it feels like it has, or it might have, and we're looking at that possibility. And so we have to figure out what to do with that. And for sure, the Roman Catholic Church has never released reports like this. There is, perhaps, something special about this year. It was a bad summer. And so I want to kind of like talk about that and figure out what to do with that. Again, I want to underline, I do not at all know what's happened with Nathan's case, but I do think it's a good time to talk about what happens when the world seems to be going this way. Because that is what it feels like. Maybe Dave was right that once more the Lord will shake not only the earth but also the heavens, so that what cannot be shaken will remain. I want to point out, this is the next slide, very simple slide, that my experience 15 years ago, so I became a pastor for 5 years here at this church. It was a surprising experience because what I imagined would happen actually is that I would become more holy. I was super excited about it. I thought I'm going to be a good guy. I'm going to deal with my issues, my addictions are going to be gone. Just the opposite took place. And perhaps it's because of the increased warfare that takes place when you're in spiritual leadership. Perhaps it's because there was a lot of time when I was working alone, and so your addictions can fester then. Perhaps it was because of the spiritual isolation that I experienced immediately when I took on that position. Because from the very day that I did that, I actually found that people who would normally have invited us over stopped doing so. It was very odd. There is this sort of this image that pastors are busy with people all the time, and they sort of are, but it tends to be professionalized. And our friendships quickly turned when that happened. And not only that, but there's more, because in fact I also found that there was a different reaction. Friends that I sort of like get together and we do the triad thing, whether formally as we have sometimes in this church, or informally, We'd just share, and often with guys, because I'm a guy, we'd be brothers, and we'd share our deepest, darkest hurts. And all of a sudden, people's reactions to those same pieces of information, the same me, sometimes wrestling with the same stuff, was different now. And it was clear that people were not comfortable with my honesty. So I don't know what's going on, and I don't even know if pastors are worse off in terms of their sin than others. But I do know that there's a particular thing that happens when you're in that position. That there's no question, don't mind me quoting the Bible in this context, no question that Satan believes that if he strikes the shepherd, the sheep will scatter. And that's exactly what he would do with us. Satan would strike the shepherd and scatter you. And that's why I am preemptively giving the sermon right now, because I do not want that to happen to this church. And I believe that God has something completely different in mind. But it requires that we pass the test. I'm gonna elaborate on that, and I'm going to complexify that. That's a very simple statement. But I do want to just say, Margaret, you were brilliant in prayer this morning. She just opened the book at one point to Isaiah 60. I want to read this to you because I really feel like, Margaret, I really feel like you gave us a word from the Lord today. And I was just struck by this, just even in worship. This is what she read, and I'm going to read a little more than you even read, actually. Arise, shine, for your light has come. For the glory of Yahweh has risen on you. For look, darkness shall cover the earth, and thick darkness the peoples, but Yahweh will rise upon you. And his glory will appear over you, and nations shall come to your light. I really believe that. I was getting pictures of that even as we were in prayer, and we didn't actually even read this far. And kings to the bright light of the sunrise. Lift up your eyes all around and see. All of them gather. They come to you. Your sons come from afar. I believe this is a prophetic vision, what the Lord wants to do. And your daughters shall be looked after on the hip. And then you shall see. And you shall be radiant. And your heart shall tremble and open itself wide. Because the abundance of the sea shall fall upon you. The wealth of the nations shall come to you. A multiple of camels shall cover you. The young male camels of Midian and Ephah. All those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense. They shall proclaim the praise of Yahweh. Who are these? They fly like a cloud, like doves to their coops. And foreigners shall build your walls. And the kings shall serve you. For in my anger I struck you, but in my favor I have taken pity on you. And your gates shall continually be open, day and night they shall not be shut, to bring the wealth of the nations, and the kings shall be led. For the nation and the kingdom that will not serve you shall perish. I want to skip ahead. The Spirit of the Lord of Yahweh is upon me, because Yahweh has anointed me. He sent me to bring good news to the oppressed and bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release of the captives and liberation for those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord of Yahweh's favor, God's day of vengeance, comfort for those who mourn, to give comfort for those in mourning in Zion, to give them a head wrap instead of ashes, and the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a faint spirit. And they shall be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of Yahweh to show his glory. And they shall build the ancient ruins, and they shall erect the former deserted places, and they shall restore the devastated cities, the deserted places of many generations. I really feel like that's for us. But I need to kind of take us from where I just put you to how we get to where that verse is. Because it seems like there's something special that Yahweh does want to say about leadership. And I think it's worth saying. Because one of the questions that I think we can have is, why does it hurt us so much when our leaders don't do what we want, as I showed you on that other slide. When they don't do what they should. So, yeah, next slide there. This one always resonates in my soul whenever I get up and do this, whether it's with the kids or the adults. James 3, not many of us should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. And then I love this. Then he just goes, and we all stumble in many ways. Next one. Matthew 18, Jesus says, if anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come. But woe to the person through whom they come. This is Mary in Luke 17. Things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anyone through whom they come. We'd be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. So watch yourselves. And Jesus his greatest anger is towards teachers who are hypocrites. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You shut the door of the kingdom of heaven in people's faces. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. You snakes, you brood of vipers, how will you escape being condemned to hell? But I want to point out, it's a question. It doesn't end with a statement. He doesn't say you will be condemned to hell. But he asks, how will you escape? Because the Lord is very concerned about his little ones. He's very concerned about you. He's very concerned about us. And he judges harshly any that would mislead any of us. And in that way, we are so eternally protected by his wrath, by the very thing that would harm us. He protects us because he takes it very, very, very seriously. He's never this angry in all of the Gospels, perhaps when he throws out the money changers, but he never goes on like this. And yet at the same time, next slide, he says that there is a thing called betrayal. And he says, it will happen. Brother will betray brother to death. And father to his child. And the children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. And at that time, many will turn away from the faith and betray and hate each other. And even from your own number, men will arise and distort the truth to draw away disciples after them. And if it's not betrayal, then sufferings are promised for us. Next slide. 1 Peter 4. Dear friends, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal that has come on you as though something strange were happening to you. John 16. In this world you will have trouble. 2 Timothy 3. In fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. While evildoers and imposters go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. And so, as we scour the Bible, we might be wondering why suffering happens. This is on the next slide. I'm going to need my own. First of all, we know that we're in a war. Whether you mark the beginning of the war from the time when Jesus came, or whether you mark the war from the time when the serpent deceived Eve, we are in a war zone. And we know what happens. We know how that war ends. But we also know that he has yet to come and rule and reign on the earth. And so there is war. And so Jesus tells us, if you follow me, you will have suffering. And it looks like you may very well have betrayal. We also know that there's sin. That people sin. And, you know, we have this thing where we kind of feel like we should have free will, but nobody else should. But the reality is that everyone gets free will. Everyone gets free will. Everyone gets free will. That's the deal. And we chose it. We chose it when we chose to eat from the garden of good and evil. Sorry, the tree of good and evil. We chose to know evil. Part of the deal. We had free will to do that too. Everyone gets free will. We chose to know both good and evil. The third is that there are groanings, that the world is yet to be redeemed, and that Jesus is about that matter, that he chooses to redeem the earth. And that is absolutely his goal. That's what the Lord is coming to do. But natural disasters befall us because the world is still yet unredeemed. And finally, God does not tempt us. He does not wish evil upon us. But I mean, if you talk to him long enough, at some point you look at him and say, Lord, I think you set the balls up on the snooker table that we're playing. I mean, I think you created Lucifer. Yeah, he rebelled, but I think you made him. And so he's part of the picture too. And let me tell you, I spent lots of time blaming him. Hasn't borne a lot of fruit. This is sometimes how I feel, because he set the whole thing up to begin with. And so when we get suffering, particularly when we get betrayal, there's waves, this is the next slide, waves of response. Thank you, just on it, Sarah, thank you. There's waves of responses. The first is shock. The first is like, what? Because it's a reinvention of our world. We trusted someone and then they betray us. That's a shock. The second is that frequently when betrayal happens, our relationship changes significantly and we lose who that person was in our lives. And that is awful. And sometimes, you know, no matter how hardly they betrayed us, we miss them. We miss them terribly. We miss them for what they offered us in our lives. And I think if you've had any acrobat in your life, you know that. And sometimes you feel bad, like, well, this person did this to me, how can I miss them? It's normal. That's what happens. They had an important role in our life. Of course we do this. We're people. We care. And then there's a loss of our memories. Now, I'm not saying we get amnesia. Sometimes we wish we did. But we don't get amnesia so much as our memories are reinvented through the new information. And we look past over everything that happened, everything they gave us, everything we treasured that they gave us. And it doesn't mean what it did anymore. Now it means something else. And our very histories are taken away from us. And then finally, and maybe this is the most devastating, we trusted that person and they turned into an acrobat on us. And so, do we know who to trust? Can we even trust ourselves to know who is trustworthy? So we lose our sense that we can trust ourselves. And so as a result, and then this is the next slide, we set our hearts variously. I think I'll tell a story about this. So when I was 4, I lived in Newcastle upon Tyne in England. And we were just living there for a couple years. My dad was studying. And I kind of didn't fit in to Britain. I'd like to say I'm sort of like, you know, cool with the Brits, but I didn't really fit in. Kind of a quiet boy. And it didn't help that we were kind of transplanted from nowhere. My brother got right in there with the local gang. That local gang wasn't dealing drugs, they were just kind of hooligans. And so he was 7, they accepted him. They were like, awesome, 7-year-old. Teach him the ways. They're called the LBAB, which stands for Long Benton Agro Boys. Not meaning agriculture, but I'm meaning aggressive boys. And so they would go around and throw stink bombs. In the 70s in Britain, you had these stink bombs. You threw them against something, it was smashed, and everything would smell roadmaps. So they'd go around throwing stink bombs, and that was the thing to be. And I remember he would come home, and he would look at his sucky little, weak little brother, who's kind of like reading books and stuff like that. And I think what was going on in his head, we haven't had this conversation ever. One day we might do it, but I think it might have to happen in heaven, I don't know. But he's not dead. I just don't know if we're ready for it. He would look at me, I think, and he could say, you know, Mike needs to toughen up. So what happened is in the day, there is this movie, or TV show, called The $6 Million Man. Steve Austin, remember? Yeah, Steve Austin, okay, yeah. Okay, so, and so what was the premise of The $6 Million Man? Yeah. So it begins with, we could make him better than before. We could make him superhuman, right? And then there's like an astronaut has had his legs blown off and his arm blown off and he's lost his eye. And so you see the surgery and they're making everything bionic, which meant robotic. And so then he can run super fast and hit super hard and see super far. And so in sort of the 70s and 80s, the way they would kind of do this in a TV show, given the technology of the time, is that you'd see like a trucker going down the highway, and you see his speedometer would say 70 miles per hour. It'd be fast, right? 70 miles per hour or 75. And then you'd see Steve Austin, $6 Million Man. And to show that he could go super fast, he would go super slow. You've got it. He's got it better than me, Stan.
Hey, hold on. You didn't sound effective. Anyway, that's it.
So he'd be running like that, and then while it was happening, the trucker would like turn over and he'd look over at Steve Austin. Because the trucker would be in slow motion too. The whole world was in slow motion when Steve Austin was busy. So all that to say, my brother realized that he could toughen me up using the Steve Austin techniques, and he'd go to me, shots, it was his own word, shots, and he'd go, shots, and he'd say, pick, because there's a number of me, shots, and his big fist would come towards me, and I would duck and try to get out of the way, but he was bigger than me, so he'd pin me down, and I'd look at him, and he'd look at me, and he'd go, shots, and this would continue for like 20 minutes, it's sort of like Chinese water torture, just kind of keep on going. So it bothered me because I had no control over it. So I went to the authorities and I said, Mom, my brother's bugging me. What should I do? And she said, classic mom, she said, just ignore him and he'll stop. She was totally right. 10 years later, he left home and never did it again. But in the meantime, I was like, taking it. So what happened actually, I don't tell the story much, but what happened is that... the more I took it, the more I felt like, you know, I'm not even fighting back at you. Like, this is totally, like, not fair. I'm really good here. Now, the fact is, he's stronger than me. He's smarter than me. Like, I couldn't even get under his skin or anything. So I couldn't do anything. But I was taking it all the same. The more I took it, the more I was like, you know, this is totally unfair. So, and the more he gives it out to me, the more I'm feeling like you are bad. Now, I have to confess this to you as a sin. But I really thought in the moment that no one was going to be mad at me. I thought everyone was going to thank me. And I chose a knife in the kitchen that I thought would do the job. But for some reason, you know, five, for some reason, I warned him. It was just like in the comic books. I said, I'm going to kill you. And he said, don't do that. And I'm totally confused at this point because I'm thinking even he knows he should die. But he goes like, Mom would try. And Dad would have to go to jail for you, and then you guys would be like living on the streets, like begging for a small change. And I was like, oh. And so I never killed him. Like, he's smarter than me. He talked me out of it. So I went back to taking it. All that to say, I would have turned to anger. I didn't actually have the means. So I turned to fundamental distrust. And years later, I realized, actually, Ben Kelly was praying for me, and he goes, you don't understand what brotherly love means. I don't know if you remember this, Ben. Do you remember? This is 1997 in the Jerzak's living room. We were in the Jerzak's living room and we were praying. And I was praying for my issues. Whatever they were at the time, I don't remember. But I do remember you looking me in the eye. And I remember you saying, you don't understand brotherly love. And I remember going, no, on the outside. But on the inside, I was like, holy crap. Because he nailed me. Because my brother had been an acrobat to me, he'd really turned on me and not given me the brotherly love that I needed. And my parents, in a way, were the same in that they hadn't protected me the way they ought to have. And so I became the person that was the most resilient. I wasn't going to let anyone do that to me again. None of this was conscious. I had to figure this out later that this is what had happened. But at 5 years old, I'm like, I won't let that happen again. And I remember frequently, like, you know, when you get to be a teenager, you're all like chilling with everybody and you're all talking to people about your problems and their problems. And every time people talked about how a relationship had failed them, I'd be like, dummy, don't trust them, would be my immediate response. Because I had learned, it was ironed into me, don't trust anyone. And then you'll be okay. So that brings us to, oh, there we go. You go, thank you. You are so on it. Now, I did skip over the first thing. The other thing, the other way that we set our hearts sometimes is that we just want to keep on going. We're just like, this didn't happen. We're going to keep on going. Everything's going to be the same. We just keep on going. It's going to be fine. You're going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. You're going to get better. It's okay. But unfortunately, that denial usually doesn't lead to the healing for the acrobat. Could. But denial rarely leads to healing. James 5 says, confess your sins one to another, pray for another that you can be healed. Denial does not lead to healing. Sometimes, next one there, sometimes we trust no person, sometimes we don't trust God. I kind of thought I had it figured. I just didn't trust people, but I trusted God. And in a way, I kind of got that. In a way, that's not too bad. Like, I think God is trustworthy. That's not a bad thing. But what I found is that my distrust for people quickly bled into my distrust for God, where I didn't actually believe that He'd actually follow through on me. Joey, I'm always telling. Can I tell the picture I had for you like the other morning? With you with the pigtails?
Sure.
She's dying. She's so troubled. What is she going to say? Thanks for being willing to tell this picture. I was just praying for Jody. I want a breakfast we were having a little while ago. And seriously, this is actually Jody in the throne room of God. This is exactly what I saw. This is totally her. She's got the pigtails. She's walking up to God. And she is holding the flipping scepter. She's like, God, this is what you're going to do. That's totally her. And like, I don't have capacity for that at all. Now, she doesn't actually pray like that. But she's like, the prayers that Jody prays on behalf of her family are far more to do with the success of our kids than mine. Because she's audacious in the throne room. But she trusts the Lord to provide. And while I think I trust the Lord, when I see her in the throne room, I know, I shouldn't have looked at you. I know I'm wrong. And I know that her fundamental trust gives her so much more with Him. So, now the other thing we do though is that we trust somebody different. We figure out the profile of the person who is the acrobat in our lives. And we're like, so that's the person that I don't trust. So I trust someone else, someone who's not like that. And sometimes it can be good. It's a lot of good in all of these things. Sometimes that can be good because we're like, hey, maybe there was something fundamentally flawed in that person. Maybe we need to recognize that. But unfortunately, sometimes this goes into hyperdrive. We throw ourselves in the arms of the person who's different, and they feel us too. Or maybe they can't handle the weight of our trust because maybe it really does belong to our Savior and our risen Lord. Next one there. Sometimes we blame ourselves. And this is the one that feels the most secure. Because if it's my fault, then I have control over it. So sometimes it can feel like, what did I do wrong? What did I do? How did I miss this? How did I get it wrong? Was it something I said? And if we can actually latch on that, figure out what that is, then we can fix the problem and then we can make sure it doesn't happen again. Then there's anger. And sometimes there's revenge. We actually get the acrobat back, which is what I tried to do when I chose the knife in my kitchen. And thank God that I didn't have the strength to pull it off. I would have a very different story. But we try to do that. We try to get them back in subtle ways, through little comms, through the ways that we talk about the acrobat. And that's what I think, as a community, we're in danger of. Not that I've heard a lot of gossip or anything like that. I'm not saying that. But I think that that's an easy one to slip into for us. So we talk about the acrobat in such a way to get that. And sometimes it's more, we want to fix the world. And so activism, and so we actually end up, if you look at many activists, they often have a story that's related to what happened. And so sometimes we try to fix the world. And sometimes that's good, but of course, anger is a lot, is difficult to kind of live on and work with. The aim is to rely on God. And so how we set our hearts really matters. I want to show you this next slide here. It's an interesting quote from Glenda Lomax in The Judas Test, a book she wrote I was praying for a friend who was suffering a terrible betrayal and slander campaign by a former close friend and ministry partner. When the Lord spoke to me, everyone must pass the Judas test before they can be promoted. They must walk in love when they are betrayed, as my son Jesus did. Now let me tell you a little bit about how we handle words from the Lord. So this is extra biblical. So what we want to do right away is we want to look at the Bible and we want to say, oh, is there evidence that this is in fact how the Lord does behave? So let's look, next slide. When we think about David, he played music for Saul, and Saul turned on him, and he said, I will not harm the Lord's anointed. And so it appears he became Israel's most faithful king. When we think about Jeremiah, his friends and family betrayed him. He remained faithful. His words are so powerful, they significantly quoted in the book of Revelation, as well as Matthew. Paul was, of course, you may know, betrayed by Demetrius the silversmith in Ephesus. There was a riot that turned him out of the city. But he didn't get angry. In fact, he came back, and Ephesus was his most significant location of ministry. Jerusalem was, their city was built in a magnificent temple by the Roman Empire, but then they crushed it, and they destroyed it, and they killed so many of them that blood was flowing down the steps of that very temple. And then they flattened it so there would be nothing except for one tower. They fled, but their religion spread all over the world. Joseph was betrayed by his brothers, by Potiphar's wife, by the wine taster in the in jail. He remained faithful and became second command in the most important nation in the world at that time. So there is evidence that actually, when we get betrayed, that there is a promotion. You notice with Joseph, though, gets betrayed three times before he gets his promotion. But it is a very significant promotion. So, one of my questions is, what will happen to us at WCB? The next one here. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised those who love him. Some didn't pass. Samson fell in love with Delilah and trusted her, even though she clearly was planning to betray him, but nevertheless still trusted her because he was in love with her, and as a result is captured and loses his power. David, while he succeeded in his very first initial test, or a bunch of initial tests, but certainly succeeded sometimes, when he didn't go to war, he failed himself and committed adultery and killed his adulterer's husband, and gives him to lust and murder, and then his behavior is imitated as his son Amnon rapes his daughter Tamar, Absalom kills Amnon, and Joab kills his son Absalom. Peter, though, betrayed by Judas, runs away, but Jesus returns to get him. So there is salvation, even when we don't pass the test. Next slide. What suffering can do? Romans 5, but we also glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And the next slide. I was going to go over and even enact the Last Supper, but I won't, we don't have time. But because our Savior and Lord Jesus shows us how to respond to an acrobat. And you might actually notice, it's interesting, you know, often when Jesus' crucifixion is referred to, the betrayal is referred to. And you can imagine that for Jesus, a man that he chose, that was with him for 12 years, that slept beside him, that shared his bread with him, ate perhaps even every meal, and I'm sure, but ate most meals with him, that he would turn on him, would hurt. And actually, I even felt like, I was talking to the Lord about this and trying to understand it, because I even felt like, you know, it's a bit different for Jesus, because he knew that Judas would betray him. The Gospel of John makes that very clear. At least a year before, I knew he was talking about it. And I felt like I should talk to the Lord about that. So I was talking to God about that. I was lying on my bed, which is my intercessory place, right? And I saw a picture of a lamb, kind of partly concealed, looking around a corner. And I felt like, you know, that was the Lord was saying, you know, there are things that you don't understand about me. So, again, so I just prayed that I would see more. And I saw this lamb stretched out on a rack, covered with many different colors and bruises and kind of twisted in pain. And I thought about how that would work, and I realized as it reflected on who God is and who He is, it doesn't help your pain to know you're going to be betrayed. To be looking at Judas all that time and know that he will be betrayed would not have lessened the pain. It would have stretched him out on the rack. See it. But it does help your planning. And next slide. Oh, yeah, there we go. Good. Yeah, so one of the things that John is always telling us, in the Gospel of John, is always telling us, is that Jesus knew. And I want to actually pause right now, because in John chapter 15, when Jesus is kind of like, just, it's at the end of things, John chapter 15, Jesus is saying, you know, you will do even greater things than me because I am going to the Father. And that's in the context of us hearing about how Jesus knew what was going to happen. Oida is the name. That's in Greek, it's Oida. John makes it really clear that Jesus oidas how to feed the 5,000 people. He knows. Makes it really clear that Jesus oidas that the testimony of John is true. And we see this knowing all the time. But Jesus said that we'll do even greater things than him. So, we don't have to run and be afraid. We don't have to not trust anymore. We can ask for the knowing that Jesus has. It will not make it less painful. It will make it more painful, but it will make it clearer. One of the pictures I had as I was thinking about you guys this morning, it was just in the shower, my other intercessory place, was of a woman in hospital, sick, jumping up and becoming an army sergeant. That's usually what we would consider skipping a few stages. We often talk about the church as a hospital, family, school, and then an army. But I feel like the Lord would have us be promoted in that way. This is not a soft gospel I'm delivering to you, but this is how we make soldiers. It's through the suffering that produces perseverance, which produces faith. And faith can move mountains. Faith is involved in healing. And so one of the things that I think he wants us to ask for is that we would know the hearts of men as he did, so that we would walk with clarity. And that doesn't mean we'll avoid painful places. That means, like him, we'll go straight into them and will make us who we are. So if you're comfortable with it, I'd like you to put your hands on your heads. Because you're going to pray for yourself right now, and you're knowing. You're going to pray for Jesus' oida, his knowledge. He knew the hearts of men. And I know this is a stretch for some of you. Some of you are like, no, we can't even. He said that we would do greater things than him. He knew the hearts of men. Some of you don't want this gift because it will hurt too much. I get it. But it will give you so much clarity. And he wishes for you to be in his army. He wishes for you to fight. He wishes for you to be successful in battle. He wishes for you to advance the kingdom of God. Clarity, grace, power. So, Lord Jesus, we ask, see these heads, see these brains. But we ask that you reveal to us the hearts of men. May we not shrink back. We also pray, Lord, that you not lead to judgment, lest you need to take it away from us, but clarity. That we would embrace the acrobat, but know what's going on. And we will follow your lead as a result of that. Oh Lord, give it to us. when Judas left. You might remember the story is that, he's reclining at the table, and he gives the bread to Judas, and it's a sign of honor to dip the bread and give it. Middle Eastern culture, sign of honor to give the bread. So he honors Judas, and then as soon as Judas leaves, John goes, "It was night." And then Jesus, you can see him turning around, and you can see him go, "Now is the time for the Son of Man to be glorified." And then he talks about his glory, which is actually what's going on, is he's going to be betrayed, and he's going to be crucified, but then he'll be resurrected. And he uses the word glory. At one point, he uses the word five times in two sentences, glorify. I will glorify the Father. He will glorify me. I will be glorified. And so what we need to do often is remember the trial and our response, and God's response is our glory. And that's true for us at WCB here today, is how we respond to whatever we're doing and receiving is our glory.